The Blues epistemology is a long-standing African-American tradition of explaining reality and change. This form of explanation finds its origins in the processes of African-American cultural construction within and resistance to the antebellum plantation regime. It crystallized Durag Reconstruction and its subsequent violent overthrow. After 200 years of censorship and 10 short years of open communication, the resurrected plantation bloc thoroughly demonized all autonomous forms of thought and action for another century. The Blues became the channel through which the Reconstruction generation grasped reality in the midst of disbelief, critiqued the plantation regime, and organized against it. The Mississippi Delta is the home of the blues tradition in music, popular culture, and explanation. It is therefore fitting that this popular consciousness is used to interpret both the continuous crisis in the Delta and African-American attempts to create a new regional reality based on cultural freedom and economic and social justice. This chapter will attempt to demonstrate that the blues epistemology is embedded, necessary, and reflective. It is a self-referential explanatory tradition among working-class African-Americans in which development debates occur. The blues epistemology was first fully explained by the Mississippi author Richard Wright in 1937. Wright developed this approach originally as part of his studies on African-American daily life and as part of a music-based critique of African-American literature. The discussion below extends his theory into the field of regional studies by integrating several related discourses. Point 3, to ensure the autonomy of thought and action in the midst of constant surveillance and violence, African-Americans constructed a highly developed tradition of social interpretation. This practice finds its origins in the secret societies prevalent during rule of RY. During this period, African, Native American, and European intellectual eruditions were forged in the crucible of the plantation South. What emerged was a highly developed introspective and universalist system of social thought and practice whose influence upon the modern world can never be underestimated. The blues epistemology rests on two foundations. The first involves the constant reestablishment of collective sensibility in the face of constant attacks by the plantation bloc and its allies, in the face also of a daily community life that is often chaotic and deadly. Therefore, the location, timing, and forms of communications necessary to reestablish the conditions for collective thought and action are of critical importance. The leaders. According to Wright, it was difficult for individuals to divorce themselves from the blues, given that its text was folkloric and its philosophy was based upon both materialism, realism, and spirituality. The blues could be called the spirituals of the city. They are the songs of a simple people whose life has been caught up in and brutalized by the inflexible logic of modern industrial existence. Since the best-known blues have love as the main theme, people have a false idea, an incomplete one, of their true range and role in the life of black people. There also exist blues which indict the social system, and they've been judged not commercial enough because of this satirical bit. Common, everyday life, the background of our national life, is to be seen through the blues. Trains, ships, trade unions, planes, the army, the navy, the White House, plantations, elections, poll tax. The boll weevil, landlords, epidemics, bosses, Jim Crow, lynchings. All such blues are as natural for the black people as eating and sleeping, and they come as a rule out of their daily experience. Their very titles indicate the mood and state of mind, which they were written. Point 2, several recent studies have identified the continuation of numerous African vocal, instrumental, and composition traditions in the blues. They have also noted the continuity of the role of performers as educators. African string instruments range from the one-string bow to the 21-string kora. Furthermore, in various parts of Africa, jaits, musical families, and orchestras serve as historians, genealogists, counselors, reporters, diplomats, and social, cultural, and economic innovators. It was not a real leap iron the string instruments of Africa to the diddly bow, the violin, the banjo, and later, the guitar in the Americas. Despite intense efforts at suppression, T.H. Afri, unmusical sensibility and scale were preserved. This complex of languageal for Rick and performance must be understood as a whole. Albert Murray has to task those who associate blues music and lyrics with a state of emotional depression. Attempts to analyze the lyrics separately as literature ultimately fail because meaning and abstraction in the blues emerges from the simultaneous interaction between language, music, and movement. Blues music is always an artful combination of incantation and percussion. It is not always the song in the conventional sense of the word. The essential message is usually conveyed by the music, whether vocal or instrumental. Verbal statement can be contradicted and in effect canceled by any rhythmical counterstatement. If the lyrics laments, but the music mocks, that statement is not one of lamentation, but mockery. The words may bemoan the loss of a lover, but if the singer is also involved with such choreographic gestures as finger-popping, shoulder-rocking, and hip-swinging all the while, the statement can hardly be considered a form of bereavement. Point 2, E.E. Sidran attempted to link this oral physicality to the process of the construction of individual and community identities. The essential nature of communication through rhythm is an unknown quantity, due primarily to a lack of interest on the part of Western science. Rhythm is the cultural catharsis Fanon has suggested is necessary to black culture. It simultaneously asserts and preserves the oral ontology. It is on this basis that black music can be seen as a source for black social organization. According to Raymond Williams, the process of communication is in fact the process of community. 3, O traveling gentlemen of the great western savannah region of Africa, who created a vast communal area throughout many different kingdoms and linguistic groups by their arts of word and music. The wandering Asmarus of Ethiopia, who helped to bring about a striking uniformity of Ethiopian poetry among the many groups of the area. The unifying effects of their reverence for Homer among the disparate Greeks. Or the early poets of Ireland, who in the absence of towns or any centralized political system are the only national institution. All performing the same kind of functions as the medieval jugglers and minstrels of Western Europe or their counterparts in the Arab world. Point 31, church. It has its own schools and masters. According to Gates, among the African-American art forms, in music, given the required maestrily of technique and a highly critical audience, there evolved a tradition of master not found in literature. Poet Amiri Barca also juxtaposes the traditions. American Negro music from its inception moved logically and powerfully out of a fusion between African musical tradition and the American experience. It is, indeed, a chronicler of the Negro's movement from African slave to American slave, from freedman to citizen. And the literature of the blues is a much more profound contribution to Western culture than any other literary contribution made by American Negroes. 32. There's always been a great deal of diversity in the blues, particularly in the form of distinct local and regional schools. Constant movement and migration ensured both continuity and further differentiation. The local traditions were created and maintained by individual performers and audiences who shared and built upon a set of foundational songs, sounds, techniques, instruments, lyrics, language, dances, etc. The interaction between local schools and the distinctiveness of regional power structures, daily life, and aesthetics become the foundation of the regional blues traditions, those of the Delta, Piedmont, Texas, Chicago, etc. ILTRE blues emerge immediately after the overthrow of Reconstruction. During this period, unmediated African-American voices were routinely silenced through the imposition of a new regime of censorship based on exile, assassination, and massacre. The blues became an alternative form of communication, analysis, moral intervention, observation, celebration for a new generation that had witnessed slavery, freedom, and unfreedom in rapid succession between 1860 and 1875. Perhaps no other generation of a single ethnic group in the United States, except for Native Americans, witnessed such a tremendous tragedy in such a short period of time. Performer Cash McCall described the blues as the almost magical uncorking of the censored histories of countless people, places, and events. Well, in the old days, you see, you weren't allowed to express your feelings all that much. A lot of stuff was bottled up inside. Coming up from the old days until now, you can't explain it in a conversation, so the best way to do it is to sing. 33, on the other hand, guitarist Willie Foster described them as the irrepressible voice of daily anguish. The black folks got the blues from working. You work all day long, you come home, sometimes you didn't have nothing to eat. You got the blues. Lord have mercy, I ain't got nothing. You sit down and cry. You ain't got nothing to eat. And that's where the blues come from. In the present period, many African-American scholars working in the disciplines and fields of music, history, folklore, drama, poetry, art, literary criticism, cultural studies, theology, anthropology, etc. have acknowledged the blues as a hearth of African-American consciousness. As stated earlier, the social sciences remain a barrier not breached. The continual presence and growth of this tradition will exponentially expand the crisis that has continued to sweep through the social sciences and the humanities as a result of the domestic and international movements of the 1950s and 1960s. There is now an intensified struggle over interpretation in the midst of another national and international expansion in the popularity of the blues. For example, in years past, white scholars have criticized African Americans for their lack of interest in the blues. Lomax recently made the following observation. Scholarship is a dark truth that is being consciously avoided because few American institutionalized scholars, African American or white, wish to confront the full implications of African American culture. It should be emphasized, since so many critics pretend not to notice it, that all authentic blues and jazz share a poetically subversive core, an explosive essence of a reconcilable revolt against the shameful limits of an unlivable destiny. Notwithstanding the whimpering objections of a few timid skeptics, this revolt cannot be assimilated into the abject mainstream of American bourgeois Christian culture except by way of diffusion and or outright falsification. The dark truth of Afro-American music remains unquestionably oppositional. Its implacable Luciferian pride, that is, its aggressive and uncompromising assertion of the omnipotence of desire and imagination in the face of all resistances forever, provides a stumbling block for those who would like to exploit it as mere entertainment, a mere ruse to keep the cash register ringing. Born in passionate revolt against the unlivable, the blues and jazz demand nothing less than a new life. 38, Willie Dixon sung about this dilemma in You Can't Judge a Book by Its Cover. You can't judge the sugar by looking at the cane. You can't judge a woman by looking at her man. You can't judge the sister by looking at her brother. You can't judge a book by looking at the cover. You can't judge the fish by looking at the pond. You can't judge the right by looking at the wrong. You can't judge one by looking at another. You can't judge a book by looking at the cover. 3, the above discussion has attempted to establish the terrain upon which the blues epistemology emerged and now operates. During the last 300 years, the African-American working class has daily constructed their vision of a non-oppressive society through a variety of cultural practices, institution-building activities, and social movements. By doing so, they have created an intellectual and social space in which they could discuss, plan, and organize this new world. The blues are the cries of a new society being born.